Welcome to the SBS Digital Learning Hour, brought to you by the Digital Learning and Assessment Department. We're coming to you today from a conference room in Central Office, bringing you the latest news in Springfield Public Schools in regards to technology, along with inspiring interviews from teachers who are using technology in the classroom. I am your host, Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed Guy. You can find me out on all the socials at Bearded Tech Ed. You can find me out on the WeLearn page on the MySBS intranet, and you can even find me on my own personal website, beardedtechedguy.com. Now this week, before we jump into the interview, I just have a couple of announcements. Number one, Nearpod has released a whole lot of materials for digital citizenship, which is happening this month, and I encourage you to go check it out. There's a lot of great tools, and it ranges from K to 12, so there's something in there for everybody. Also, with these podcast interviews, we would love to interview someone that you believe is doing a great job in the classroom that you would like to have recognized. So please feel free to send those names along to us. We would love to be able to reach out to them to set up an interview and talk. If you've been following along in our blog posts, we've been talking about blended learning and how you can use that in your classroom now. During remote time, you learn how to use a lot of great tools, and I'd love for you to continue to be able to integrate them into the classroom. There's a great articles there, some great things to think about, and I highly encourage you to go out and read them. They are available on the blog on MySBS, and I also post them out on beardedtechedguy.com. For this week's interview of the week, I met with Denise Cody, and this was pre this year. This was at the end of last school year. We had talked about a lot of great things, including technology in the early 2000s in the classroom to things that we are doing today and everything in between. So check it out.
My name is Denise Cody. I currently teach in the middle school division at Zanetti over at 474 Armory Street. And this is my 17th year teaching in the Springfield Public Schools.
So 17 years. So that would take us back to the early 2000s. Have you always been at Zanetti in the middle school, or did you bounce around to other schools, different grades?
I have definitely benefited from getting to work in a lot of the cool communities we have in the Springfield Public Schools. So I started out at New Leadership Charter School, which is not even in existence anymore. But teachers there were Springfield Public School employees, little known fact. I worked there for 3 years as a seventh grade English teacher. I then went over to the Springfield Renaissance School and was the founding eighth grade English teacher over there. I stayed there for almost a decade, did a couple years there as an instructional leadership specialist. I left Renaissance in 2017 and wanted to try out some opportunities in the empowerment zone. So I did a year over at Impact Prep at Chestnut Campus. And then I got recruited to come over to Zanetti to help develop the middle school program. And I am leaving Zanetti at the end of this year to go work at Springfield Conservatory of the Arts, because how blessed are we to have a performing arts school in this city? And I'm excited to be a part of the team over there.
That's awesome. Have you before we jump back, because I'm going to go back into some of your history, have you visited the school?
No, but I drive by it because I'm a Springfield lady and it looks so pretty. And I'm so excited to get to go in and see all the renovations and what they've done with the inside. And I've seen the auditorium on Convocation, watching Convocation. So thrilled that I get to be in a space that is newly redone and has that beautiful common space for everybody to use, and excited for the possibilities over there.
It's one of my favorites that I've been into in the last few years, especially once they got it done, because previously they were in two separate locations.
Oh, okay.
So it's a really cool school, and Marcos has the that auditorium set up with some of the best sound equipment that I've ever been around. So
that's awesome.
That's really cool. But I want to start back when you first started teaching. So early 2000s, what was technology like in your classroom?
Oh my goodness. So I don't even remember technology being a part of what I was doing. I know I had a desktop computer, and I would, I used it to create documents, print them, and then photocopy them, but there wasn't really technology. I remember in my second year, I wrote a letter to Best Buy to ask them to donate a TV and some audio equipment, like some video equipment, so we could enhance some of what we were doing. And that felt exciting that we got a TV, and it was like an old school TV, like a tube TV, and a DVD player, and maybe a VCR DVD player. People don't even know what VCRs are anymore. But yeah, the lowest tech ever. We did have a technology class. There was a computer lab at New Leadership when I started in 2005. So that's where students got some of that tech ed. But aside from that, in the classroom, no tech.
Yeah, I remember those days when I was student teaching, not here in Springfield, but up in Vermont.
Yeah.
Classrooms had the big tube TVs. They were usually either on a cart that could be moved around, or they had this ginormous bracket in the corner of, no one can see what we're doing because this is all audio, but in the corner of the room, and it just overtook everything. So,
yeah. If you know, then you know. They don't even need to see what we're doing, because people who know about those days, they know exactly what you're talking about.
That is true. So I'm guessing you had a lot of overhead projector, like transparencies, vis-a-vis.
Yes, marker all over my hand from writing on the, you know, the transparencies. That those were the original days of my teaching career.
I know when I first started teaching, I kept trying to print on the transparencies, but the printer would get too hot and totally melt.
Yes.
And I would be the reason why the printer wouldn't be working, because I'm like, oh, this is a great idea, because my handwriting is terrible when I am trying to write on the side. So I actually learned that if I could just project the projector onto a chalkboard or a whiteboard, I could actually just write on the board itself. And so that's what I had students doing. So like, that was the extent of my early technology too. So
absolutely.
So when thinking about using technology with your students, what was one of the first things you remember doing? Like when we started, because like, what's strange to even think about, like less than 20 years ago, this is what technology was in the classroom.
Yeah, it is crazy when I think about it, because I don't often allow myself to think about it. It just feels such a part of what we're doing. It's so integrated into our day to day. Sometimes so much so that we rely on it. And when it hiccups, then, you know, there's some struggle in that, as opposed to the complete opposite that existed, like you said, less than 20 years ago. So I don't remember what the first integrations of technology where students had more access to technology on a regular basis. I don't remember what that was. And if I'm going back in my mind, I remember like the We Learn campaign several years ago, and that felt like a greater push and support for everybody to, you know, use the resources that we had available to us and start to professionally develop ourselves to better support our students in what they need to be ready for when they leave us. And now even with this Portrait of a Graduate campaign, which is a really great way for us to capture what do we want students to be able to do, we're always mindful of how technology plays into that and where our students deserve all the opportunities that are available to them to be prepared to go out into the world and do these careers, some of which don't even exist yet, you know, making the shift to help our kids understand. Maybe we don't ask, what do you want to be when you grow up anymore? Because my middle schoolers in front of me now could very likely hold careers that aren't even, we don't have names for them yet, because things are developing so fast.
Yeah, We Learn. That was when I first started working in Springfield proper, because I was at MLK Charter School for a couple of years in 2010 to 2012. And then 2012, when I started at Walsh, that's when We Learn had started with the four puzzle pieces. And
was that 10 years ago?
That was 10 years ago.
Oh, my goodness. OK,
I know.
Yeah,
I say it now, and like, I've been in my position for the last 6 years. But I'm like, wow, 10 years ago, this is what, like, just teachers having laptops was a big deal.
Yeah, a really big deal.
Well, I remember when I came into the district, you mentioned We Learn, and that was 10 years ago, which still blows my mind that I'm saying it right now.
Same, same.
Do you remember any of those early things that you tried doing with your students?
If I'm thinking back, I do remember how great it felt to bring more visual supports to the classroom. So if I was talking about something, I could show as simple as a picture of it or even video of it, and enhance lessons with more visual support. So it was a shift from, you know, constantly talking or using discussion as a way to move the work along to being able to provide more visual supports. And as I got more comfortable and developed my abilities with technology, that I could then have students use that technology in order to create and support what they were doing.
If I understand correctly, you've always taught English, right?
Yes. Middle school English the whole time.
The whole time. When it comes to middle school English, the writing is a big aspect of it. Reading is obviously a big aspect of it. Did you have any opportunities early on? Because most of the schools had laptop carts that would go around.
Yes.
Did you have an opportunity to have your students either create like PowerPoints or some sort of visualization of whatever they were writing or reading about? And did you have the ability to have them actually type up papers? And what was that process like getting them into it?
Yes, we did all of those things. There were definitely PowerPoint presentations. I remember, I don't know if I maybe watched some sort of instructional video, but learning Prezi and teaching Prezi to my kids. And they liked that there was a couple of years where that was the hot thing for them to do. And absolutely typing their work and learning how to format work correctly. And I do remember having a laptop cart. And when I was at Renaissance, we had our laptop carts had printers on them. So there was, you know, it was that students were doing work and they could print it and handed printed work. And if we fast forward to now, I don't ever get printed work for anything. Schoology, all my submissions are through Schoology. So saving paper, making the world a better place and using technology to our benefit.
Yeah. Saving paper is one aspect. The other aspect in my head, because I taught in fifth grade, we would, depending on who my fifth grade co-teacher was, would depend on what we taught. And there was one year I was teaching English. And of course, I fell into that more Fontes and Pinnell. We're going to have a reading journal. You're going to write to me weekly about what you're reading. And then realizing that I had to write a response back to that. And if I was not as quick to do it, there would be weekends I would bring home 40 notebooks. And I think to now, I'm like, if I was doing this, this would be OneNote and it would be perfect because then absolutely, I wouldn't have to carry a truckload of books home because when you're teaching 50 kids reading, it can be quite a lot. So there is a lot of benefits to using technology when it comes to reading and writing in the classroom.
Agreed.
So as we continue on in your educational journey here, when it comes to the last few years, what are some things like right before COVID hit? Were there things that you were already trying to do? Because at that point, we were in the upper grades, at least we were 1-to-1 and we were really trying to push in using a learning management system.
Yeah, in the early implementation of having an LMS, I always want to make sure that I'm solid and have answers to student questions before. So I might not be the quickest to integrate something, but once I've taught myself and done the learning I needed to do, then I'm really thrilled about offering all the things that the district gives us to students. I don't remember when that happened. I do remember that the students I have now, my eighth graders, I've been with them since they were in sixth grade. So we had a really great year of integrating technology in ways that were meaningful. In March of their sixth grade year, we had to go home. Everybody had to go home. And then it was a little bit shaky for all of us that like April, May, June time.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely did my own professional development over the summer, which I know so many of us did, if not all of us did, and came back. And the gift of the 2 weeks we had to prepare when we came back for the full year of remote learning. And I felt really ready to take that on. I think I thrived, although I was so thrilled to come back into the building, I have to say, because I don't love working from home. It's not for me. But I really felt like I thrived in that because I had time to teach myself in March, April, May, time to create a PD plan for myself in the summer and just really hit the ground running when we were back with our kids. And so I didn't feel, although I didn't love working from home, I felt really solid about the work that my students and I did for the almost year that we were home. When we came back hybrid, I found a quick adjustment to, I had about 50% of my kids back in the building. And I felt like I adjusted to that really quickly. And the thing I love about this year is the, I'm going to say the title wrong, but it's so fun and alliterative, like the 22 tools. This is my PD for this year that I'm really committed to using this challenge that y'all have set out for us as a way to make sure, like, what are the cool programs out there that are available? How do I learn them? What ways can I implement them in practice? And I've really been empowering my students to help me learn that. So I'll tell them, my advisory group, who I get to spend the most time with during the day, I've allowed them to really become my learners with me in this process. So I'll be like, hey, there's this thing called Wakelet and I don't know it and I'm going to try it. Can you check it out and give me feedback? And, you know, oh, I've never used Schoology for the purpose of a discussion board, even though I know it's there. I just haven't used it because when we did come back to in-person, I did definitely for the first few months, I really tried to give a break on technology and have more interaction in order to help our kiddos get reintegrated into being face-to-face, and then slowly brought the technology back in ways that I thought would be effective for them. And yeah, the challenge has become a PD plan for me this year. And I really love learning stuff that I didn't even know existed because we have 800 balls up in the air all the time as educators. And yeah, so I feel excited to be continually learning what's available. I also have the benefit of one of my loved ones who used to be an SPS teacher with me at Renaissance is now an instructional technology coach in Texas in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So she shares a lot of resources with me. And anytime somebody finds a tip or a trick, you know, Educators Unite, we share those with each other. And it just feels like a constant way to learn, where when you're in teaching for a long time, you might start to feel like, oh, there's no more PD for me because the things that are being taught are really more to the benefit of newer teachers, where I feel like this technology surge and remote learning and the challenge the district has issued to teachers in a fun way are like, oh my goodness, I get PD again. I can really professionally develop myself using these challenges and tools that are available. So that's been awesome.
Well, that's really awesome to hear. I loved creating I created the whole thing. So. And I was inspired because I'm part of the Microsoft Innovative Educator group in the country. And someone else presented this is what they did for PD in their district. And I'm like, oh, this is fantastic. So I actually, what's really fun about that is that was planned to come out before COVID. Like in January, I had half of it already built because we were going to start in the following school year.
Right.
And I had presented it to my boss and my boss's boss, and they loved the idea. And then a couple months later, well,
the world changed. Yeah.
And then I had to, like, during that COVID time, like, our department, I swear, for the entire month of April and half of May and part of March, six sessions a day of PD. 5 days a week. It was the most PD that I've ever done in my entire life of like presenting the same things over and over again. So that was really great to do. And then kind of helped inspire like, hey, let's create more and let's get this thing done. So that's for the start of this school year, which we didn't start at the beginning. We started in January. So we had something that we can say, hey, all these great things that you learn how to do during your remote time can actually still be done in the classroom and be effective. Yes. So it's great to hear that you are using it. And I just wanted to come back to one of the things that you had mentioned, and I can see we're almost out of time here. What is a couple of the tools or processes or things that you took away from your remote time that you are still doing now that you are 100% in person?
I don't know that they were original to my remote time, but definitely a very strong reminder of the importance of having a plan, you know, executing the plan, being able to adjust on the fly, digging into my teacher toolkit when needed, and constantly reflecting on that process. So was my plan effective? And seeking student feedback in that too. So I think maybe where being in person and kind of coasting on neutral, because I have done this work for many, many years, remote learning was a reminder like, hey, it's really important to have this plan, execute this plan, adjust, be able to adjust quickly with a variety of tools, and, you know, make sure that our customers, our kiddos, are getting what they're supposed to get out of it, whether that's by reviewing their assessments or straight up asking them, especially those of us who, I don't know elementary school as well, but middle and high school teachers, what a beautiful gift we have, because we have like fully communicative and thinking humans in front of us who are often very ready to tell you exactly what's right and exactly what's wrong, because they're social justice warriors. So using them as partners in the work, rather than, you know, just thinking they're here to receive some information. This is a cooperative process. So that was a reminder through remote learning and into returning to the classroom.
Awesome.
Awesome.
So a couple of questions that I have left. What has been your favorite tech tool that you've used in your classroom?
Ooh, I don't know if I have a favorite. I'm really proud with how I am using Schoology, all the ways that I'm using Schoology. It did feel a little bit hectic to try to navigate between Unified Classroom, PowerSchool, and all the syncing. But when I just let go of like the sync and told my students and my family, Schoology is where I am doing all the things and let's get our access through that, that was really good and allowed me to focus instead of being wrapped up in where there might be sync issues or people trying to access the old programming. So I just feel really good about utilizing Schoology. I know I'm not using it to its full capacity because there are so many things going on in there, but the way I'm using it is working really well for my students, for families, and for me. So that's the thing I feel best about. I don't know that I have a favorite, though. There are so many choices.
Awesome. Well, Schoology could be that one. So to wrap up our time today, and this question might lead to a couple of follow-up questions.
Okay.
Through the digital learning playbook that a lot of us read at the beginning of COVID, the very first chapter focuses on teacher self-care and knowing that you have to take care of yourself before you can take care of your students. As teachers, many of us, when I was in elementary, my hours would be, even though school didn't start till almost 9 o'clock, I would still get there 7:30 and I would probably leave around 6. As a middle school teacher, your hours, I think, are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a lot of time to take care of yourself. And then because you're always taking homework home, you got lesson plans and who knows, whatever other creative ideas you want to try to bring into your classroom all take time. So what are some things that you've done to take care of yourself, especially over the last few years?
Well, what a journey it is for all of us to realize the importance of self-care, because if we're not caring for ourselves, we can't really care for our loved ones, our students, or anybody else that we're trying to care for to the best of our ability. We might feel like, oh, we can still care for those folks, but something's lost in the translation there if we're not really caring for ourselves. So in the lifelong journey that is for all of us, and the additional journey that is for people who work of service to their community like educators do, I've definitely learned how to set some boundaries that make life more peaceful and productive. So after remote learning, I made a shift that I'm not allowed to take work home. So I have to stay in the building until, you know, 4 or 4:30. And I understand that's not, everybody can't do that for a variety of reasons, but that's the thing that I've done. So making sure that my work lives at work, my laptop doesn't come home with me. And even if I have to stay an extra hour or 2 hours sometimes, and movement, you know, contributing to my personal wellness, whatever that means for everybody. So, I I need to take a walk, or I need to take a bike ride, or I need to go to an indoor facility because winter is 6 months long in New England. I have to make sure that at least 5 days a week, I'm getting 30 minutes of movement. And that's something I've learned over the last couple of years with the pandemic and really managing my personal well-being. That's something that I definitely do. And then making sure that in my non-work time, I'm doing things that bring me joy, like spending time with loved ones, cooking, baking. I don't read for pleasure during the school year because my reading time is devoted to student work and emails. But when we're on the holiday break in the winter, when we're on February break, April break, I read 3 books over spring break this year. And in the summer, I read a bunch of books. So that's definitely a piece of my self-care routine. And yeah, those are the things that come to mind.
So, like I said, there's going to be a couple of follow-ups.
Yeah.
When it comes to personal reading, do you have a particular genre or style of, because you're reading like student work all day or the entire year, is there a particular stuff that you like to read?
My favorite genre to read is memoir or autobiography. Mm-hmm. I love reading people's real life stories. Having said that, an amazing book that I read over spring break was called Homegoing by Yaa Gyasi. And it was not a memoir. It was a fiction novel, but so beautifully written and told. And the English teacher in me just gets all the magical feelings because I'm like, this person got to, you know, like some teacher got to have this person in their classes and like see them develop into being able to create a book like that. So I think I have a lot of future New York Times bestsellers in front of me all the time, too. So I just get excited about stuff like that. But memoir and autobiography, I'm just fascinated by people's life stories.
Awesome.
Awesome.
And then when it comes to movement, there are some people who are walkers. There are some who are runners. There are some who are cyclists. And there's some like me who like to do Tough Mudders. So what is your preferred way of movement?
My top preferred movement is walking, but I would say power walking. My body is not made for running, but I do like a brisk walk. So I'm not a slow walker. And then my second preference is cycling and just really riding my bike around Springfield. I got a bike maybe 5 years ago, and that's been really a nice addition. Before that was like just walking all the time, whether that was outdoors, which is my preference, or in a gym when winter doesn't allow me to be outdoors. But I've incorporated biking in the last 5 years, and that's been really nice too. I've even rode my bike to work before, which kids think is so cool.
It is really cool. When I lived in South Hadley, I debated about trying to bike from South Hadley to central office, but the whole highways, like trying to find an easy path to ride was a little unnerving for me.
I love that you thought about it. And also shout out to John Galanis, who teaches at the Springfield Renaissance School, because he bikes from South Hadley to Renaissance more days of the school year than he drives his car. And he's been doing that for several years. So he's a great motivator to that end. And you could check in with him if you want to talk about routes.
Well, I'm actually living out in Blandford now. So
okay, don't check in with him. No biking from Blandford. Not allowed.
If I'm biking from Blandford, I got to wake up at like 5 a.m.
2 days before. Not happening. Yeah, time travel.
But I do have a cyclist bike now so that I take Peloton classes all the time.
Oh, Peloton's so cool. Yeah, that's so great.
And then the last thing, because you said cooking and baking, what is the one thing that you learned how to make over the last couple of years that you absolutely love?
Oh, well, baked oatmeal is my newest thing I've been working on for the last couple of weeks because I'm always trying to think of new breakfasts. Breakfast is hard and it's the most important meal of the day. Shout out to Steve Carey from Focus Springfield, who teaches everybody that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. So baked oatmeal is my new game. I don't know that I learned anything new. I think I honed my skills on something. My turkey lasagna got better over being home for a while. My homemade mac and cheese got better. My chicken marinating skills have really taken, you know, a lot of steps. So nothing new. I tried new stuff, but I don't think that anything landed the way I wanted. But I definitely improved my skills with things that I've been cooking for a long time.
Well, that's awesome. So hopefully someone will hear something and be like, oh, I can do that too. So
absolutely.
They can help take care of themselves. So
yes.
I know we're in the middle of the school day. Thank you for your time. This was a lot of fun.
It definitely was, Mike. Thank you so much.
Yep, thank you.
Thanks, Denise, for taking your time out of your busy day to sit down and talk with me. I hope you all that were listening learned a lot. I loved hearing that story about getting technology from Best Buy back in the day. And if you know those TVs, you know exactly what we're talking about. I think another really great point that Denise made during our time, she mentioned that once we started to be able to integrate technology more into the classroom, it really opened up for her an avenue for visual supports. No longer are we printing things off and drawing them by hand. I definitely never drew anything by hand, but some people did. And then having the VHS tapes, that was able to be taken to the next level. So imagine being able to go from reading in Encyclopedia Britannica about the Sistine Chapel to actually doing a virtual tour of the Sistine Chapel. Those kind of things are what we're talking about when we think about technology and how far we've come and how much it can help in the classroom. Plus, we like to save paper. I'm always gonna promote OneNote. And it was great to hear from Denise, who is one of our superstars in the 22 Tools Challenge, which is still going on. You still have time. It's only October. And we have a couple more months for you to continue to earn points. And who knows, maybe you will overtake Denise, who I believe is at the top of the leaderboard right now, which you can check out on my SPS. As we wrap up today's podcast, I just want to thank you all again for listening. Wherever you happen to be listening to the podcast, please leave us a review and a rating and share it with someone. The only way for more people to find out about this podcast is for you to share it with your colleagues, share it with family members, share it with anyone who wants to learn about what's going on inside of Springfield Public Schools classrooms. There's a lot of amazing teachers here in Springfield, and I love to spotlight them. And the way that we get to continue to do this, of course, is through you and sharing out these awesome interviews. Wherever that happens to be, Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, make sure that you are there. And if you love this episode, please give us 5 stars. That's how we move up the charts. All right, that's all I've got for this week. I am Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed Guy, and this is the SPS Digital Learning Hour.